Я вдячен кожному і кожній з вас, кожному і кожній за цей місяць.
In a short video posted online, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky sent out a message of thanks to everyone who has helped during the first 30 days of the Russian invasion. His message comes as people continue living under relentless attacks.
Kyiv's Mayor Vitaly Klitschko, the former heavyweight boxing champion, says it's been a month of tragedy, courage, and great purpose. And Ukrainians have shown what freedom and unity mean for us.
And later in the program, how young people are following a major war in Europe, primarily on social media. Today is Friday, March 25th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Friday that Ukrainians need to achieve peace and halt Russian bombardment that has forced millions to flee. As the country marked 30 days of war, he reflected on the conflict.
Я вдячен кожному і кожній з вас, кожному і кожній за цей місяць.
Zelensky said that he was grateful during the conflict, especially to the armed forces, National Guard, border guards, rescuers, territorial defense personnel, special services, and people of all professions who protected their lives and, as he put it, our free Ukraine. Al Jazeera also reported that Ukraine hoped to open a safe corridor to evacuate civilians from the port city of Mariupol on Friday, which, according to the BBC, Russian forces had entered its central part. Reuters News adds that as many as 300 may have been killed in the theater bombed on March 16th. Ukrainian officials have said that about 130 people have been rescued from the rubble and the theater basement. Russia denies bombing that theater and also says it is not targeting civilians. The International Press Institute also named Russian journalist Oksana Balina as the fifth reporter killed during Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And with even more wounded, international groups are stepping up efforts to support media safety. VOA's Sirwan Kajo has more.
Amid the crackle of gunfire and thud of a shell hitting, journalists run from a column of flames. This footage, shot in the Ukrainian city of Irpin in early March, is becoming a common scene in a war that has so far claimed the lives of four journalists and left others wounded. Media groups and international bodies are stressing safety and reminding all sides that journalists are civilians, not military targets. Warnings increased after Fox News journalists Pierre Zakrzewski and Alexandra Kushinova were killed and correspondent Benjamin Hall was seriously injured near the capital Kyiv on March 14. A day earlier, award-winning American filmmaker Brent Renaud was killed and his colleague Juan Arredondo was injured in Ukraine when their vehicle came under fire. And on March 1, a Russian strike on a TV tower in Kyiv killed Yevheny Zakun, a Ukrainian camera operator for live TV. Scott Griffin is deputy director at the International Press Institute.
Journalists under international humanitarian law are civilians, and attacks on civilians are never acceptable. And targeted attacks on journalists in a conflict zone amount to a war crime.
Journalists on the ground are in need of equipment and other help, which is why Reporters Without Borders on March 12 opened a resource center in Lviv near the Polish border. UNESCO is supporting those efforts, providing safety equipment and training resources. Keeping journalists safe is also the focus of the ACUS Alliance. The coalition of news organizations is sharing resources and knowledge to help local media. Elisabeth Kantej is executive director at the ACUS Alliance.
We are not an emergency response organization, as many of our ACUS signatories and members are. But of course, the scale of what's happening is so great that we're doing our best to support, you know, not only our members, but also the journalists on the ground. And we've been supporting in many different ways.
Griffin says journalist deaths in Iraq and Syria should serve as a reminder for newsrooms to conduct proper risk assessments before sending reporters to Ukraine. beyond dangers in Ukraine, Griffin says the International Press Institute is also documenting repression and censorship in Russia.
We have two actually different and important situations going on. One is obviously the war on the ground in Ukraine and what that means for Ukrainian and foreign journalists covering the conflict. And on the other side, we have this immense wave of repression in Russia itself, targeting independent media.
For those on the ground, the support could go a long way. Sirwan Kejo, VOA News, Washington.
Cities are also under a relentless Russian bombardment, with thousands dead on both sides. AP correspondent Ben Thomas continues our coverage.
Residents of Kharkiv, engulfed in smoke as they try to douse flames consuming their homes. In the capital, Kyiv, it's a warehouse leveled by Russian shelling. It's been quieter so far in Odessa on the Black Sea, but Ruslana Baksheva says she can hardly believe what the Russians are doing to her country.
It's absolutely terrible, and it's absolutely cannot come in my brain.
Kyiv's mayor, Vitaly Klitschko, the former heavyweight boxing champion, says it's been a month of tragedy, courage, and great purpose. And Ukrainians have shown what freedom and unity mean for us. The United Nations estimates more than 3.5 million Ukrainians have been forced to flee the country entirely, and more than half the country's children have been forced from their homes. I'm Ben Thomas.
Ukrainians across the country are also sheltering in metro stations and lining up for food as cities around them are reduced to rubble. Reuters' Emma Yaley takes it from here.
Natalia Shaposhnik and her daughter Veronica have been living in a blue and yellow train far underground Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city since the beginning of Russia's invasion.
Surely it's not better than home, but it is livable. One can say our living conditions are better than others. What I mean is we are not right on the platform. My child and I are in the carriage. We get food. There is a toilet. We are doing fine.
For four long weeks, Saposhnik and hundreds like her have hunkered down inside the station in the north of the city, many of whom have endured near daily shelling. Above them, destroyed or heavily damaged buildings line the eerily quiet streets. Anastasia Horkova is a local journalist.
Here, there are about 250 people sheltering here. Many go out during the day to breathe fresh air, go to the supermarket, and this flew here.
A couple hundred miles to the south, the scene is no better in the battered city of Mariupol, where long lines for humanitarian aid have filled a former shopping center. Alexandra is a local resident.
My husband didn't make it to receive humanitarian aid. He had diabetes. The scarce diet of the last days led him into a coma and he died. If he could have made it for the aid, he'd be alive. I still can't tell the Russian relatives he passed away.
Many have evacuated the port city for temporary shelter in Russia's southern city of Taganrog, like pediatrician Galina Ovchinnikova.
We were eating once a day. All we have cooked in the morning, we were eating during the whole day. And the rest of the time, we were sitting in the basement. It was dirty there and dark. We were burning candles, making oil lamps. It was cold there.
83-year-old Raisa Kairat said she lost contact with her daughter and grandchild when the siege started.
So beautiful Mariupol used to be, and suddenly it was reduced to dust. How dare you fire at people? They are animals, not humans. Kindergartens, stores, schools. School nearby was destroyed. Why would anyone shoot at the houses where people lived? What for?
Russia continues to deny targeting civilians and calls its invasion a special military operation.
Emma Yaley of Reuters News. Earlier today, I also spoke with reporter Anna Chernikova in western Ukraine as she prepares to join an aid convoy into Kyiv this weekend.
We'll go from the west part of Ukraine back to Kyiv with humanitarian aid. We will join our friends who are doing this on a regular basis. And there are a lot of organizations like that which just have been created during this month. Items are coming from European countries as a European humanitarian aid, and this would be medication and certain military items needed, so certain equipment, certain protection stuff, and some hygienic stuff also for soldiers.
Ukraine has also accused Russia of forcibly relocating hundreds of thousands of civilians to Russia from devastated Ukrainian cities. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has those details.
Ukrainian officials allege that Moscow wants to use civilians as hostages to pressure Kiev to give up. Ukraine's ombudsperson said on Thursday that just over 400,000 people, including 84,000 children, have already been taken to Russia, where some have reported shortages of food and water. Russia says the people it's evacuating are civilians and they're going of their own free will. Meanwhile, Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky has urged his country to keep up its military defense and not stop, he says, even for a minute. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The United States and the European Union have also announced a new partnership to reduce Europe's reliance on Russian energy. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen thanked U.S. President Joe Biden for his attendance at the NATO and G7 meetings, saying that his presence there sent a powerful message.
The transatlantic partnership stands stronger and more united than ever. And we are determined to stand up against Russia's brutal war. This war will be a strategic failure for Putin. Our cooperation on the four successive waves of sanctions against Russia has been extraordinary and exceptional. The sanctions are now working their way deep into the Russian system, draining Putin's resources to finance this atrocious war.
She added that by working together on sanctions, alliances are stronger and can make a difference.
We are continuing to reinforce our cooperation in many strategic ways, on humanitarian and security assistance to Ukraine, on energy, on fighting the threats against our democracies, on solving outstanding issues in the EU-US cooperation, including in data protection and privacy. In a world faced with disorder, our transatlantic unity upholds fundamental values and rules that our citizens believe in.
In his remarks, President Biden asserted that President Vladimir Putin leveraged Russia's energy resources to coerce and manipulate its neighbors.
The United States and the European Union are going to work together to take concrete measures to reduce dependence on natural gas, period. And to maximize the availability and use of renewable energy. We're going to accelerate widespread adoption of energy-efficient technologies and equipment like smart thermostats, work to electrify heating systems all across Europe. We're going to invest in innovative solutions and technologies to make the switch from fossil fuels. And together, we'll advance the use of clean and renewable hydrogen to reduce our carbon emissions.
The United States is also providing Europe with 15 billion cubic meters of liquid natural gas this year and acknowledged that eliminating Russian gas will have costs for Europe.
But it's not only the right thing to do from a moral standpoint, it's going to put us on a much stronger strategic footing.
From Brussels, the president then flew to Warsaw, Poland. Biden will go to the eastern town of Zewsztuz near the border with Ukraine to get a firsthand look and international efforts to help some of the millions of Ukrainian refugees fleeing the war in their country, and also speak to American troops bolstering NATO's eastern flank. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Thousands of international volunteers have come to Ukraine to help in the fight against Russia's invasion. Many are former soldiers, and the reasons for coming to Ukraine vary. But now, some are going back home. VOA's Celia Mendoza is up next.
Dedmir Hiseni is a 22-year-old Albanian who volunteered to fight in Ukraine. He was caught in the recent Russian missile attack on the Javoriv military base in the western part of the country and shared these images with VOA.
Russian militaries attack us with the bombs, 30 bombs. And we have 35 persons killed and 124 persons hurt.
Hiseni, who survived the attack without serious injury, had arrived in Ukraine 2 days earlier for training.
Everybody's lost. Everybody's lost. I can go now, I can go now. And after everybody went outside, just run. And after we go in the bunker to protect myself and other person. And it's a big catastrophe.
Hiseni left the base and crossed the border from Ukraine to Poland to decide about his future.
I go in my house now. Yeah.
It was scary enough?
Yes, yes. Two days after, 30 bombs. You know, I'm not ready for that, you know.
Former Colombian soldier Martin Rios, who is 27, says he enlisted in the Ukrainian army as a volunteer to help defend the Ukrainian people.
Wanting, like all retired soldiers, to have the privilege of belonging to a cause.
Rios is also a survivor of the Jabotiv military base attack. He says there were 10 other Spanish speakers in the large group of men and women from all over the world.
That's when you really see the importance of military training and combat experience. Perez, fortunately, was able to get out. I was one of the last to leave the lodging, and the moment I left the lodging, I felt the first missile, which was the one that sent me into a puddle, and it was only seconds before I was unconscious.
Cesar Perez, another volunteer, recorded these images during the attack, which, according to Rios, lasted around half an hour.
It's very clear this is not the first time that I've been in a conflict, but of this magnitude, it's something different. It makes you consider things.
A former American soldier is among the volunteers. He arrived in the Ukrainian capital to join the ranks and is now sharing his experience. For security, he prefers not to show his face.
If you don't have military experience, you shouldn't have come, because it's dangerous and you can endanger the people who are here as well.
For the two volunteers returning home, they say as much as they wanted to help, they are now just looking forward to being with their families again. Celia Mendoza, VOA News, Córdoba, Poland.
Turkey is paying a heavy economic price for its dependence on Ukrainian and Russian wheat, as Russia's invasion of Ukraine sees wheat exports drying up. Dorian Jones reports the shortages are raising further concerns in Turkey about skyrocketing inflation.
Once filled with ships delivering wheat and sunflower seeds from Ukraine and Russia, Istanbul docks are empty. Nearly all food exports from the Black Sea have been substantially reduced because of the Ukrainian conflict.
We need to import roughly 10 million tons of high-grade, you know, hard winter wheat. And, you know, I don't even know if Russia has that much to supply, judging by the export controls they're imposing on their own farmers. And Ukraine was Turkey's number one grain and oilseed market. Now these are out. Of course, Turkey can procure from other markets, but they are farther away, which means higher transportation costs, and more importantly, they are more expensive sources.
Turkey is already paying a heavy price for its dependence on imported grain.
The Turkish Grain Board had imported wheat last June for $262 per ton. But last week it was $456, at least double the price. So Turkey is negatively affected because it relies on agricultural imports and because of rising world food prices due to the Ukrainian war and having to pay in foreign exchange.
The value of Turkey's currency collapsed last year and continues to remain under pressure. With the wheat import bill paid in dollars, inflation, already running at more than 50% before Russia invaded Ukraine, is fueled even further. Simit, a cheap traditional breakfast sesame-covered bread, has nearly doubled in price. Despite the government subsidies on flour, the expectation is that more price increases are coming.
It means
The increase in the price of bread will show up in the coming months. With natural gas, electricity, and water increasing for sure, bread prices will go up. It is not only about the price of the flour. There is also yeast, which was 60 liras and now went up to 160 liras. On top of it, there is the cost of labor.
My other problem.
Once rare, strikes are now common as workers call for higher wages to mitigate rising prices.
Essentially, bread is the fallback option if you can't afford anything else. And I've heard people from the bakery and flour industry claiming the average loaf of bread, currently 4 liras, I believe, could rise in price to 7 over the summer months. And that's devastating, and it's going to have certainly an impact beyond economics. It's certainly not going to do any favors to Erdogan's domestic popularity.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan faces re-election next year. Erdogan could suffer at the polls, analysts warn, for his government's policy of relying on imported wheat rather than boosting domestic production. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Around the world, young people are following a major war in Europe, primarily on social media, with some often disturbing and sometimes misleading images landing in their news feeds. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias talked to teenagers in the United States, Mexico, and Poland to find out how they're processing the bloodshed in Ukraine.
YouTube is the social media channel Nathan Sarpel uses to follow the war in Ukraine.
There's like bombed buildings and people like in shelters and subway stations hiding from the war that's going on above their heads. And it's just very traumatizing to watch.
The 12-year-old says he usually isn't traumatized for long.
I'm just shocked. And then I take a little second to process that. And then I just continue with my day.
It's a similar reaction to that of Isabella Vega Downs, a Mexican student who gets trending Ukrainian war news on Instagram.
Videos show up of people shouting or trying to escape, or images of people who are asleep in what might have been a subway station.
Talking to her parents helps the 15-year-old deal with negative feelings. She'd rather focus on the humanitarian side.
How one can make donations. What we can do to help all those people that we see in those images.
Closer to the conflict zone, Polish teenager Maria Kantowicz says TikTok is full of alarming, eye-opening videos.
I am really interested about what people in my age actually feel at the moments like that, how they feel when they have to leave their country and living and stop their life in another country, maybe even without their parents, without their family. I am terrified what they feel.
Parents of all three allowed VOA to interview the teenagers. They said they trust that their children, with some supervision, can keep misinformation at bay.
But every single day,
Jules Sterpak, who makes social media content, doesn't think it's that simple.
Even vetted journalists have been open about it is very hard to decipher what is real and what is fake on these platforms in terms of these videos of violence.
Alongside Terpak, Khalil Green was among several social media influencers recently briefed by the White House on the war.
I could very easily see people having been riled up about this crisis, but if it gets resolved or partially resolved to the point where it doesn't directly affect them, people losing interest and moving on to the next big crisis.
For now, Nathan Sarpel says he spends half an hour each day watching Ukraine war feeds and mostly keeps his emotions inside. Asked how he sorts truth from fiction, he admits to some guessing.
That's the part that I'm not 100% sure of. But, I mean, I just gotta trust that it's real.
Meta, the company that owns Facebook and Instagram, declined VOA's interview request. And we haven't heard back from YouTube, TikTok, and other social media sites we asked for comment. Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Tacoma Park, Maryland.
And one final note before I go. We're going to have a special episode tomorrow in your feed, as well as airing at 19:35 on VOA, as President Joe Biden wraps up his European trip. And on that note, on behalf of our entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. And don't forget, you can stay up to date with the latest developments by visiting our website at voanews.com and following us on social media. Just follow at VOA News. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.